Translation by Srila Prabhupada. The king said, "To transgress the laws of respectful behavior toward the brahmanas is certainly a great offense. On the other hand, if one does not observe the breaking of the fast within the time of Dwadashi, there is a flaw in one's observance of the vow. Therefore, O brahmanas, if you think that it will be auspicious and not irreligious, I shall break the fast by drinking water." In this way, after consulting with the brahmanas, the king reached this decision, for according to Brahminical opinion, drinking water may be accepted as eating and also as not eating. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. When Maharaj Ambarish, in his dilemma, consulted the brahmanas about whether he should break the fast or wait for Durvasa Muni, apparently they could not give a definite answer about what to do. A Vaishnava, however, is the most intelligent personality. Therefore, Maharaj Ambarish himself decided, in the presence of the brahmanas, that he would drink a little water, for this would confirm that the fast was broken, but would not transgress the laws for receiving a brahmana. In the Vedas it says, "Apo snati tan naivasitam, naivasinasitam." This Vedic injunction declares that the drinking of water may be accepted as eating or as not eating. Sometimes in our practical experience, we see that some political leader, adhering to satyagraha, will not eat but will drink water. Considering that drinking water would not be eating, Maharaj Ambarish decided to act in this way. Om Agyanatimarandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manovishtam Stapitam Yenam Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Datati Swapatantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahaganat Raghunatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savatutam Na Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shiva Shikanvitamscha Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Godangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sutta Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpa Trubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pristaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gaurabani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatyade Shatarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sadi Gaur Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Brahmanati Krame dosho dvadasyam yadaparine yat kritva sadhume bhuyada dharmo vanamam shpishat. Ambasa kevalenata karishe brataparanam ahura bhakshanam viprahyasitam nasitam chatat. The king said, "To transgress the laws of respectful behavior toward the brahmanas is certainly a great offense. On the other hand, if one does not observe the breaking of the fast within the time of Dwadashi, there is a flaw in one's observance of the vow. Therefore, O brahmanas, if you think that it will be auspicious and not irreligious, I shall break the fast by drinking water." In this way, after consulting with the brahmanas, the king reached this decision, for according to Brahminical opinion, drinking water may be accepted as eating and also as not eating. So in the purport, Prabhupada mentions, in our practical experience, we see that some political leader adhering to satyagraha will not eat but will drink water. So that's a reference to Mahatma Gandhi, is his policy. He was a bit funny about the words because he didn't want the English translation to misrepresent what he was doing. The non-violent resistance. He didn't like the word passive resistance because he was feeling that that was more a material type of affair. But Mahatma Gandhi, actually, he was an exalted personality, actually. You know, he wasn't just some, you know, like a politician, what you see in everyday life. You know, he had qualities. He had a lot of qualities of sattva gun, actually, the mode of goodness in him. So, because of his mode of goodness, he considered that what he was doing was, he wasn't so materially attached to the results. He considered that according to his karma, he was engaged in a certain way. And the satyagraha, satya means truth, and agraha means insistence or holding firmly to something. So satyagraha means holding firmly to the truth. So he translated it as insistence on truth, and he also translated it as soul force or truth force. So his idea was that instead of just rebelling against the British government and, you know, having the standard procedure is just to kill everybody, you know, and have an uprising. So his thing was, he was trying to establish the truth. You know, he wasn't that we're us and you're them and we hate you, so we're going to kill you because you've taken over our land and we want our land back. He was trying to elevate people's consciousness a bit more, to come to the platform of understanding that we're all living beings, actually. We may have different bodies, and our bodies may be changing over time, but inside, we're all living beings. Actually, inside, we're all the same. I think I know where this is, where Prabhupada says this. Bhagavad Gita, chapter 13, text 20, the last sentence of the purport, Prabhupada says, all transformations and variety in respect to living entities are due to the body. All varieties among living entities are due to the body. As far as spirit is concerned, living entities are all the same. As far as spirit is concerned, living entities are all the same. So we're all the same. We all have our individuality, but we're all the same spiritually. So the idea of this satyagraha, adherence to truth, the point that he was trying to make is that let's focus on the truth that doesn't change. Instead of focusing on the apparent truth, which changes all the time. In Gandhi's case, we see that there was Indians and there was British, and the British came and took over, and now the Indians were getting fed up. They wanted it back. So instead of focusing on that, you know, the man who's a Britisher, as Prabhupada used to say, in this life, in his next life, maybe he's an Indian, you know, and the one who's an Indian in this life, in his next life, maybe he'll be British. So what's the point of that, you know? What's the point? It makes more sense. It's much more intelligent to build our life on a principle which doesn't change, isn't it? So that's the principle of satyagraha. And Prabhupada mentions that sometimes a political leader adhering to satyagraha will not eat but will drink water. So Gandhi used to do a lot of fasting as political protest, which Prabhupada actually didn't. There's a few purports where he mentions it's not. It's in the mode of passion, actually, he said. It's not what we're supposed to do, to fast for a material purpose. So when Prabhupada first met Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, his spiritual master, he was involved in Gandhi's movement. He was a follower of Gandhi's movement. And Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur said to him, the first thing he said to him, he said, you seem like an educated young man. Why don't you preach the glories of Lord Chaitanya in the Western world, in the English-speaking world? And Prabhupada's argument was that how can we promote something if we're still under British rule? You know, first we have to have our independence, and then we'll have the strength to present the philosophy of Krishna consciousness across the world. And Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur rejected that straight away. He said Krishna consciousness doesn't have to wait for any it doesn't have to wait for any material condition, was his point. Krishna consciousness, it doesn't wait for anything. And Prabhupada actually, in his preaching, he used that philosophy a lot, because when he came over, he said, don't wait, you know. There's an idea that, I'll wait when I get old, I'll do my spiritual life, you know. Like, at the moment, I have so many things I have to do, you know. If we're young, we're thinking, well, I have to travel the world, I have to experience different things. If we're more in the middle part of our life, we're thinking, well, I have to raise my children, I have to go to work, I have to do the job. So we think, when I retire, in my old age, then I'll start thinking about God and I'll start, you know. Prabhupada rejected that straight away. He said, don't wait. Because that principle, Krishna consciousness, it doesn't wait for anything. Spiritual life is now. Because if you don't do it now, you don't know what's going to happen next. You know? Like, you might get run over by a bus. Actually, you know, I was talking to a devotee a couple of weeks ago. She got run over by a bus. And she had to go back to the hospital recently. It was about a year ago. And she's still, you know, she's still on crutches. So people actually get run over by buses. So we might get run over by a bus, you know. Who's to say you won't? Nobody thinks they're going to, you know. I mean, some people jump in front of buses, but not so many. So the point is that, and that was King Kulashekar's point as well. It's that verse. You know that verse. Yeah. While I'm healthy, let me die now, because I can absorb myself in Krishna consciousness now. So let me just die now, so that while I'm absorbed in Krishna consciousness, I can, you know, become reinstated in my spiritual position. Who knows when we're going to bloop, you know? You can bloop any time. So, you know, you don't leave these things till later, you know. Another example that's given is, like, if there's a fire in the house, you don't wait, do you? You know, you deal with it straight away. Or you get out straight away. So, there's a purport where Prabhupada says, from the very beginning of life, one should practice Krishna consciousness or spiritual life. From the very beginning of life, or else, from the point of understanding and realizing its significance. So if something has happened in our life that we've had an inkling that spiritual life is important, then that's the point that becomes our priority in life then, spiritual life. Because, you know, otherwise you don't know what's going to happen. And the reason I'm saying it is that because, like, Prabhupada had that mood, you know, he was following Gandhi's movement, and he was thinking that, no, we have to do certain things first, then we can do Krishna consciousness. But his spiritual master put him straight away. He said, no, Krishna consciousness, it doesn't wait for anything. You do it now. Everything else is secondary. You know, like, we're practicing Krishna consciousness. You have to eat something. You know, it's not that eating is our main focus. Prabhupada said, you eat enough to keep body and soul together. You have to sleep. So, you know, sleeping isn't supposed to be our main enjoyment. You sleep enough so that you have a healthy life. Similarly, making money. How much money do you need? You know, we should know how much money we need and just do that. You don't strive for more and more and more, you know. We don't put our, that's called taking shelter. You don't take shelter of making money. Don't take shelter of relationships in this world. Don't take shelter of your body. Don't take shelter of your mind. These things are just here. You know, they just happen to be here at this point in time. And they'll change. It's not that somebody can sit here and say, they might change. Somebody can sit here and say, they will change. They have to change. Anybody who's alive knows that they change. Because everybody here, the youngest person in this room is 7. You know, everyone else is like adults. So everybody's been 1, you know. Everybody's been 5. You know what I mean? Everything, things are changing. You know, we've been to school. You know, we've suffered in school. A hellish existence. you know, for long enough. You know, now we're suffering in our adulthood, you know, but then, you know, you get into youth, you get into young adulthood and everything's great, you can do what you want now, so you're having a laugh. And then that goes on for a while, and then you hit 30, 35, Taruna was mentioned the other day, and then, you know, like, you're 22, and you're playing some sports, and you get a knock, and it hurts the next day, and then you're all right the day after that. When you get to 40, you get a knock, it hurts the next day, it hurts the next week, it still hurts a month later. And then certain times when you injure yourself, you have to just accept, okay, this is going to hurt for the rest of my life now. It gets like that, you know? Like, when you're young, you know, you don't notice so much. You know, young people think, like, old people are just, like, a waste of space. But if you look at old people, and when they're trying to get on the bus, they're not just having a laugh that they try and get on, trying to get on the bus like that. They're in pain, you know? They're suffering in pain, you know? It's like, it's, we're at work, sometimes you have to go to people's houses and stick up smoke alarms. So one bloke's downstairs and he's giving a whole spiel about smoke, fire safety and all that. And then we have to go upstairs and you put a smoke alarm and you test, you look at all their electrics. And, all, you know, you see if they're safe, their house is safe. So I go in, it's okay to go upstairs, yeah, go upstairs. I go into the guy's bedroom and on top of his wardrobe, he had about 12 boxes of adult nappies. You know, he's an old guy, and it's incontinence, isn't it? That's what it's called. You know, stuff starts coming out, you know? Like when you're a baby, you've no control, stuff comes out. Someone has to wipe it up for you. And then when you're old, stuff starts coming out again. And I was just looking at it, this guy's got nappies, you know? Is this my future? You know, like Buddha said that. The Buddha, when he was born, his parents did his astrological chart and they saw he had extreme renunciation in his chart. So they were alarmed. They thought, okay, we don't want him giving up. We want him to be the king. So he has to take over the kingdom. So keep him in the palace. Don't let him see old age. Don't let him see disease. Don't let him see death. They tried to protect him from these things. So one day, he was protected from all these things. He never saw an old person. He never saw a diseased person. If someone got ill, they were kept away from him. Because they didn't want to trigger off his vairagya, his renunciation. So one day he went out and he saw an old person and he said, "What's that?" And the guy said, "It's an old person." And he said, "How does that happen?" You know, he says, "Well, over time, that's what happens to the body." So his first thing, "Is that going to happen to me?" And he's like, "Obviously, you know." And then he went to a crematorium, he saw dead people. "Is that going to happen to me?" So we don't think like that because we don't have that renunciation in our chart. We have a lot more enjoyment, you know, tendency to try and enjoy and be the Lord. But we're supposed to try. We're supposed to make an effort. So the point is, when we see these things, we should start thinking, this is my destiny as well. You know, like the guy, it's not that a guy was sitting at home and he thought, "I'm bored, I think I'll develop incontinence and have to wear nappies." It was forced upon him. You know, bad stuff doesn't happen by choice. You don't choose to get run over by a bus. You know, buses drive over you. It's just like, it's not, you know, it's not by choice. It's not our choice that this stuff happens. So, there's a purport now, can't remember where it is. But Prabhupada says, he's given the example of a man who's being tossed around in the ocean. Now, we're being tossed around in the ocean of material life. But because of our ignorance, we're trying to find some solution, like, you know, learning to swim or getting a rubber dinghy, you know, or, you know, somehow. But Prabhupada is making the point that whatever you do here, you're still in the ocean and you're still struggling for existence. It's still a struggle. There's a prayer, one of Kunti Devi's prayers. She says some people, different people speculate as to why Krishna came. And she says, some people say you came to glorify the Yadu dynasty. And others say that you came because of the prayers of the earth, Mother Earth, the personification of the earth, prayed to Lord Rama because she was suffering like a boat in the ocean, she says. Not that the earth was suffering like she's drowning in the ocean, but it's specifically mentioned like a boat in the ocean. So I was thinking, usually you have the example that if you're drowning in the ocean and someone comes with a boat and you climb onto the boat, then you're safe. But she's saying that even if you're on a boat, but you're on the ocean, it's not really life, is it? You know, it's not life. You want to go to Fiji and get on the beach and, you know, enjoy yourself. Like if you're stuck on a boat, you know, even if you have some whatever water, you know, and you have some food or whatever, but it's not life. It's not real life. So the point is that what we're doing now, it's not real life, actually. You know, go to sleep, get up, wash yourself, brush your teeth, go to work, get grief all day, go to sleep, get up, think, oh, maybe I should get married, you know, get married, get council tax, get electric bills, get water bills, get neighbours annoying you, get unlimited grief, give grief to all your family members, and get grief. And it's just an endless cycle of grief and grief and grief and grief. And that's why old people look like, you know, because Prabhupada didn't look, Prabhupada was like, he was beaming, he was shining, like a spiritually advanced personality is shining. But a material personality, because they've just taken grief for the last 80 years, you know, what do we expect is going to happen? You know, you're going to end up miserable. So we have to get out of this place. That's the point that I'm trying to make. That's the point that Prabhupada was making. Two things. One, get out of this place. Two, do it now. That's the 2 points. One is get out of this place. Two is don't wait for anything. Do it now. It doesn't depend on your material situation. It doesn't depend if you're a man or a woman. It doesn't depend if you're a brahmachari or a grahastha or a vanaprastha or a sannyasi. It doesn't matter if you're a bin man or if you're a corporate multimillionaire. It doesn't depend on anything. It depends on your desire to get out. Prabhupada said that in the Nectar of Devotion, he said that to go back home from the material world back to the spiritual world, to become self-realized, in other words, it only depends on one thing. It doesn't depend on anything else except for one thing, and that one thing is a person's desire for it. The only thing you need is to desire to go, to become reinstated as a spiritual being. Now, if a person has that desire, still, there are certain things inside which are blocking that desire. Because we might want to be Krishna conscious, but we might also like football, you know, or whatever. So there are certain things which are blocking it. Now, to accelerate that process, to accelerate the desire, to build up the desire more and more, there's sadhana, which is spiritual practices. That's Prabhupada in the Nectar of Devotion. That's how he introduces sadhana. That sadhana means, our spiritual practices means, to accelerate the increase of the desire for spiritual life. So there are different sadhanas. Shishi Radha Gokulananda Ki Jai. There are different sadhanas in spiritual life, and in Krishna consciousness, our sadhana, Prabhupada has established a very nice sadhana for us, centered around chanting the holy names and hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. So we get up early, we don't get up late, we get up early, we chant the holy names. There's a whole morning program set up. I was talking to one devotee who recently changed ashram, and he said, He can't be bothered with all that mongolarity anymore. And I said, oh, Hare Krishna, you know. He can't be bothered with mongolarity anymore. So there's this kind of thing. It's like the spiritual practices are there for us, for our benefit. It's not just for the sake, you know, because we're conditioned that there's a thing in the world called job's worth. I don't know if that's a common expression. Someone's a job's worth. It's like there's a line. You don't stand over that line. You stand behind that line. And you'd be saying, well, what does it matter if my foot is like a little bit over that line? Because the line is there. You stand behind that line, you know? Like, I mean, okay, on the tube, there's a good reason why you don't, you know. But if someone's a job's worth, it means they're like a stickler for the rules. They try and establish the rules just because there are rules. And when you question them and you say, well, why? Well, there's no particular reason. It's just because that's the rule. And I enforce the rules and you have to follow the rules. So that's like, the world is full of people like that. So then we come to Krishna consciousness, and that's in our subconscious mind, that we're thinking people are always like that. So you think then that the acharyas are like that, and they're saying, there's rules, what you need is rules, you know, because if you don't have rules, then you won't have any rules. So you won't have anything to follow, so you have to follow these rules. You know, so then if that attitude builds up, then you can end up thinking that this is just a whole load of rules. But the point is that the system is there for us. Because if we follow this system, like if somebody comes and they follow the morning program, if they do kirtan, they chant the holy names and they do kirtan with devotees, and then you go outside to work. I mean, this is my personal experience. You come here for the morning program, you get in the car, you go to work, and it's like you get hit with a wall of horribleness. As soon as you go outside, it's like a wall of ignorance, and you start dealing with people who just haven't been to morning program, you know? And they're just like, ah, you know, it's just so, ah, you know what I mean? And it affects your consciousness, is what I'm trying to say. It affects your consciousness, and it affects your consciousness in a very strong way. It's extremely effective, because the whole thing has been implemented by the Lord himself, Lord Chaitanya, Harinam, 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 Eva Kevalam, that you chant the holy names, and you chant the holy names in the association of devotees. And, you know, your life will be much better, you know. So, there's some things. There's different sadhanas. And one of the sadhanas, Prabhupada in this pastime about Maharaj Ambarish, he used to quote quite a lot these verses 18 to 20, which describes that Maharaj Ambarish always engaged his mind in meditating upon the lotus feet of Krishna, his words in describing the glories of the Lord, his hands in cleansing the Lord's temple. So he describes how Maharaj Ambarish engaged all of his senses in the service of the Lord. And that's essentially our process. That's what we try to do in Krishna consciousness. It's like Prabhupada quoted that verse so many times. So we're trying to engage our bodies in the service of the Lord, instead of engaging our bodies in the service of our mind, you know, for sense gratification, for enjoyment. We're trying to give up the enjoying spirit. This body is not me. This body is not mine. This body is not meant for my enjoyment. This body is part of Krishna's energy. So because it's part of Krishna's energy, it should be used for Krishna's purpose. Like, stop stealing it, you know, stop nicking stuff. It's Krishna's property, so use it in Krishna's service. That's the underlying attitude. Now, there is one verse I want to read, because when we hear that we engage all our senses in the service of the Lord, there's a development of Krishna consciousness. And there's a verse in the very beginning of the Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 2, where Suta Goswami is given his introductory explanation of Krishna consciousness. Sushusho Shradatana Sya Vasudeva Kataru Chi Sian Mahatsevaya Vipra Punyatirtana Shevanat. He says, O twice born sages, by serving those devotees who are completely freed from all vice, great service is done. By such service, one gains affinity for hearing the messages of Vasudev. So by engaging our bodies in devotional service, beginning with chanting the holy names, and then practical services, menial services, engaging our body in that way, because it's done in the service of Prabhupada's movement. Prabhupada is here, Punya Tirtha Nisevanat. Punya Tirtha means a person who purifies the holy places. We go to holy places to become purified, but certain personalities go to holy places and they purify the holy places. That's called Punya Tirtha. So this is, you know, Srila Prabhupada is our Maha Bhagavat that we take shelter of. Punya Tirtha. So by serving him, by serving his mission, then great service is done. Great service is done. By such service, one gains affinity for hearing the messages of Vasudev. So the point is that by doing the practical service, we develop a taste for hearing. And when we develop a taste for hearing from the Maha Bhagavat, then things start to churn up inside on a deeper level. Now, I'm not saying I was accused before. Someone wrote me an email saying that I didn't do justice to, they felt I was like slightly one-sided in a certain argument that I was presenting. So I don't want to sound one-sided as if, you know, this thing and not that thing. It's in the same way that a mango starts off, you could say, as a seed. The seed grows into a tree. Then you get a flower bud. That's how fruits are formed, as a flower bud. Then there's a little fruit which is unripe. So the mango is not ripe. Now that mango develops into a ripe mango. Now, when you have a ripe mango, where is the unripe mango? You know, it's a kind of a peculiar question to answer. Because the unripe mango is inside the ripe mango. But you can't say it's inside it because that mango is ripe. So the unripe mango is gone. But actually it's still there in its mature form. So Krishna consciousness is like that. It's a maturing process. So to say that the point of Krishna, to say that the point of doing practical service is to develop a taste for hearing, it doesn't dispense with practical service. You always do practical service. But the practical service matures in the same way a mango matures. It matures, and then the message of Krishna consciousness comes in. It comes inside. Like you look through the Bhagavatam and the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna's trying to say something, you know? Like, there was one person said to me, a good friend of mine, but she said, oh, all this Dvaitavad, Advaitavad, all these philosophies, I just want to love Krishna, you know? I just want to love Krishna. So a lot of people say that. I don't like philosophy, I just want to love Krishna. But what I was thinking was, if somebody says they love you, and then you start talking, and then they say, stop talking. You know, I'm not interested in what you have to say. You know, like sometimes with ladies, that's quite an important thing, that you have to listen, you know. Listen. Because if you listen, you care. You know, if you listen, you care. And the thing is, for men also, you're talking to someone and they're in mid-sentence and like, oh, whatever, you know, and they walk off. You feel kind of, all right then, you know. So on the one hand, the person's saying they want to love Krishna. On the other hand, they're not particularly interested in trying to understand what Krishna has to say. Then it doesn't really balance up, you know. And you look at what Krishna has to say everywhere. It's hardcore philosophy, you could say. It's Upanishads. It's the knowledge of the Upanishads. Even to the gopis. He wasn't just lying around with the gopis thinking, oh, what a beautiful day. You know, you look at the instructions, what he said to them on at Kurukshetra, at the solar eclipse. You read the instructions Krishna spoke to the gopis, you know. It's called the cream of the Upanishads. So the cream of the Upanishads, the cream of the milk includes the milk. You don't just say, "Ah, milk is a load of rubbish, I'm only interested in the cream." The cream means the cream comes from the milk, you know, because if the milk is shaken, the cream is in the milk. There's a certain process to extricate the cream from the milk. So Sukadev Goswami was Pibata Bhagavatam Rasamalayam, the third verse of the Bhagavatam. He's chewed this thing. He's chewed it. And because he's chewed it, it's become more relishable. So he's chewed the knowledge of the Upanishads. Because he's chewed the knowledge of the Upanishads, that knowledge has become more relishable. So that's the Bhagavatam. The Bhagavatam is the mature fruit of the philosophy of the Vedas. So by understanding what Krishna has to say, then we can enter into a relationship with Krishna. I'm running out of time, but I just want to say one thing. That because it was mentioned last week in one class, Patanjali's Ashtanga Yoga system, because I was talking of like the sadhana, different sadhana processes. And it was also mentioned about controlling the mind. It was also mentioned about controlling the mind. So in another class, so I just want to try and, you know, contribute like one thing. So Patanjali's Ashtanga Yoga system, Yama Niyama Asana, Pranayama Pratyahara, Dharana Dhyana Samadhi. In the same way that we have Shraddha Sadhu Sangha Bhajana Kriya Narta Nibriti Nishta Ruchi Asakti Bhava Prema, they have Yama Niyama Asana Pranayama. So Yama Niyama, it was all explained very nicely previously. So Yama Niyama, Yama and Niyama means do's and don'ts. It's essentially like a bodily concern. How to live your life. Begin. Be vegetarian. Be healthy. You know, all this, you know, it's already been explained. Then asana, the purpose of asana is to begin to steady the mind for yoga practice. Pranayam. Now, the soul is spiritually pure. When the soul becomes reflected into the material energy, then the soul takes on a false identity, which is called ahankara, false ego. Now, there's two things. One is called stula ahankara, and the other is called sukshma ahankara. Stula ahankara means, I am a man, I am a woman, I am this, that, whatever. Sukshma ahankara means a very subconscious acceptance of the fact that I am a product of the material energy. That's subtle false ego. So when the soul is reflected into the material energy through the medium of the false ego, then he begins to accumulate more and more. He accumulates a mind. When Prakriti is agitated by the modes of nature, then a mind comes upon him. From the mind comes senses and sense objects. From the senses and the sense objects comes a physical body, and in that way the soul becomes covered. So pranayam, what it does is that how the mind and the senses live in the physical body, they ride on the prana, the movement of airs in the body. That's how it's described in Patanjali Muni's Yoga Sutras. That the soul is riding on the air within the body. Now, pranayam means, usually we don't think about it, but at rest we're thinking, I am this body, means this physical body. Pranayam means exercises where we've dispensed with the I am the body idea. We can perceive directly, I am not this physical body, but I have some existence within the body. That's pranayam. Now, pratyahara means, literally speaking, it means withdrawing the senses from the sense objects. Not in the external sense that I close my eyes and look away. It means that I'm looking, the object is there, the eye is there, the seeing power is there, even the mind is there activating the whole thing, but I am not seeing that thing. I've taken another step back. So pratyahara means we're talking, I am not the mind now. Pranayama means we're perceiving that I'm not the body. Pratyahara means I'm perceiving I'm not the mind, which is an interesting experience that comes. This all comes through chanting the holy names and hearing the Bhagavatam. Another way is Patanjali Muni's yoga system. Now, dharana, dhyana, samadhi. Dharana is the beginning of what you would say absorption in the self as spirit, as a spiritual entity. Now, in the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam, chapter 15, Krishna describes the yoga cities. There's 8 primary, 10 secondary, and I think 5 cities which come from the mode of goodness. So all those yoga cities, like Anima, Lagima, Mayima, smaller than the smallest, all these things, Krishna says dharana, they come from dharana. On the platform of dharana, that's when cities come. So dharana, after dharana, dhyana, and then samadhi, means further stages in the development of Krishna consciousness. I'm not saying too much about those ones for, you know, the reasons that, you know, that's what I've heard, I'm trying to say it. If someone has realization of this, then they can talk more. But in the introduction to this chapter, Prabhupada mentions that when Durvasa Muni went to bathe in the Yamuna, it says, because he was absorbed in samadhi, he did not come back very soon. He did not come back very soon. So this is the level of Durvasa Muni. He's on samadhi. He's on the samadhi level. You know, later on, he was personally able, he was at will, he was able to go to Vaikuntha and speak to Lord Narayan himself. You know, so what kind of personality is this? You know, Durvasa Muni. So the point I was going to make was that in the Bhagavad Gita, the mind, controlling the mind, controlling the mind, sorry, I've gone over time, but if you don't mind, I'll just finish one point. In the Bhagavad Gita, this point of controlling the mind is spoken in chapter 6. And there's a very nice verse there, which is, Bandura anatmanas tasya, yenatma nevatmana chitaha. Anatmanas tu shatrupe varte datme vasatruvat. For him who has conquered the mind is best of friends. But for one who has failed to do so, his mind will remain the greatest enemy. Now the interesting thing about this verse is, for me at least, that yena atma eva atmana jitaha. For one who has controlled the mind, Krishna says jitaha. Jitaha means conquered. You've conquered the thing now. You've conquered over it. But when he says of one who has failed to control the mind, the word is anatmanaha. It's not ajitaha. Like jitaha means conquered. And if you want to make the opposite of that, you just put an a in front of it in Sanskrit, and it makes not that thing. So he doesn't say ajitaha. He says anatmanas. Anatmanaha. Now, atma means the self. Anatma means not the self. So for one who has conquered the mind, it's a case of, you say, jitaha, he's conquered the mind. But a person who has not conquered the mind means he's anatmanaha, which means he's not the self. So in order to conquer the mind, it means you have to become who you are. That's what's being spoken in the verse. If we remain who we're not, we're never going to conquer the mind. If I keep thinking I'm Kulashekar and I'm going to conquer my mind, you know, then it's never, you know, you may do for some time, depending on the strength of your willpower, you know. And some people, they have such willpower that even till death, there's that story that Prabhupada used to tell about the two guys fighting. It was a bit of paper, and they were saying, was this paper cut by a knife or cut by a scissors? And one said it was a knife, the other said it was a scissors. And, you know, they started arguing, and then they started fighting, they started punching each other, and then they were by a river, the guy dragged them in the river and started dunked them under the water, and then pulled them up and say it was a knife. Never! So he dunked them under the water again, and he kept them under the water, and the guy's dying, and he goes like this, and he puts his fingers up in the air, and he says, scissors, until death, you know. So he's got such willpower, He will not budge from, you know, even until death, he won't budge. But that doesn't help very much, you know. If we have so much willpower, even till death, we won't budge. But usually we don't have that much willpower, so we just flop after a while. You know, it's like, Mangalarty every day, you know. And then like, you know, we're just like, flake out. Because we're trying to operate according to willpower. Now, Krishna says, you don't try and operate according to willpower. That's in chapter 3. He says, Karmendriyani samyamya yaaste manasas maran. One who restrains the senses of action but whose mind dwells on the sense objects, he certainly deludes himself and is called a pretender. Because he's trying to control his senses by his own willpower. But we don't control the senses by willpower, we control the senses by transcendental knowledge. The transcendental knowledge means, I am the soul, I'm not the body. And if we become situated on the platform of the soul, then the knowledge, then the senses automatically become controlled. Indriyani paranya hur, indriyebhya param manaha, manasastu param buddhir, yo buddhe paratastu saha. That the senses are higher than dull matter, mind is higher than the senses, intelligence is higher than the mind, and the soul is higher than the intelligence. Then Krishna says, evam buddhe param buddha samsta bhyatmanam atmana jahi satram mahabaho kamarupam darasadam. Thus knowing oneself to be transcendental to the material mind, senses and intelligence, one should control himself by deliberate spiritual intelligence and slay this enemy called lust. So the point is that through knowledge we come to a point of spiritual realization, and when that happens, then everything beneath it is saturated by spiritual consciousness, which means the intelligence is spiritualized, the mind is spiritualized, the body is spiritualized. So the point is to hit the thing at the source, which is become the Atma, be the soul, don't be an Atma. Don't be that thing which is not the soul, be the thing which is the soul, and then everything falls into place. Sorry, I've gone over time. Srimad Bhagavatam Mahapuranam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Hare Krishna. I don't know if anybody wants to make any comments or...